This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast as we get you going on the 2015-16 regular season as we do our team previews, and we're already halfway there. We're getting to the better end of the team, so things are going to be looking up, even though not all the teams are in the best of shape as we start up a brand new season in the month of November coming up. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich, and I am joined by my other co-host, Adam Murray.
I'm glad to be back.
You said that like you didn't care.
Sports?
Well, where have you been, Adam Murray?
I've been off in Ireland, where rugby is the sport du jour out there, as there's a World Cup tournament that nobody even knows exists
and,
here.
And very, very eclectic versions of music, I've heard.
Yes, I got to hear the dulcet tones of Weird Al out there, some local traditional Irish fare. Mm-hmm. You know,
not a lot of basketball in Ireland, I would assume.
No, not a lot of basketball. Even college football doesn't exist. The NFL, they play on delay on Monday.
Didn't they play some college football games in Ireland? Like, I remember Notre Dame and Navy had a game there maybe about 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, well, that's Notre Dame. But, yeah, you know, other than that, there's just no. Like I said, we caught the Kansas City Chiefs and who do they play? Like Cincinnati? It was on Monday at noon.
Okay.
They just tape delay it. Like, they don't. You know, everything's all just whatever soccer and, like I said, rugby, which is just a lawless sport.
Oh, is it fun to watch? Is it kind of like hockey in a way?
It's like schoolyard, where you just have one person with the ball and everybody just tries to tackle them. Mm-hmm. It's just like weird old school football where you can't pass the ball.
What's the concussion protocol for players in a rugby game?
I think if you don't get one, you didn't play in the game, because they don't even wear helmets. That's how old school the game is.
Not even, like, the leatherheads?
So some of them have, like, the little rubber Nerf helmets, but for the most part, like, I'll say at least three quarters, no helmets.
Do you think, because I've heard a couple of players where they're going to continue to wear, you know, plastic masks so that it can avoid injuries, and maybe, so, I mean, Rip Hamilton, you know, he had the broken nose a couple times, but I think he wore it just for good luck. Do you think that the athleticism in basketball is getting so out of control that people have to wear protective gear?
Well, if you're having, you sort of get used to it after a while.
I mean, look at all the shin guards and the elbow sleeves, and, you know, even the headband can kind of help protect you if you fall on your head, you know?
Well, they all have the super padded sleeves, the super padded knees. Their legs are all taped up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's getting to that point where if you want to not break down, as you saw with Yao Ming, yeah, you need to have that little extra layer.
Well, do you believe in some of those, when they say that the gear can kind of like, you know how they have those, like, those wristbands that you wear? What do they call them again?
Oh, those magic aura,
yeah,
super unicorn bracelet.
Do you believe in those things? Like, some athletes really believe in it. Like, if I wear this sock instead of another sock, or if I wear this shoe instead of another shoe, it's going to help me. I'll be less likely to hurt my foot than I would be if I wore a different one.
No, I don't think that's just more superstition and, well, I did good luck with this one, so these are now my lucky shoes, and these are my lucky sleeves, you know.
But look at LeBron, it's like LeBron takes the headband off because he had a bad game, and then he has a great game, and I remember, I think in the Warriors, I don't even remember if he wore the headband, did he?
I don't remember.
In the finals, I remember that one game against the Spurs, that epic game 6, where the headband popped off, and then he just started taking over the game, and everyone's like, you see, you can't take the, it's like when Kurt Angle takes the singlets off, or when Hogan rips the shirt off. It's like a magic power that's unleashed, but, you know, it's just some fun stuff there, but, no, we're just diverting, but we're gonna be actually talking about some teams this year, for this version. No LeBron, unfortunately. We'll be there pretty soon, but not yet. We're calling this one, this grouping of five, as we go to we get into the top 15, so we're going 15 through 11 on this one. This category is called I'll Be Watching You. You obviously, what do you think about when you think of I'll Be Watching You?
These are the teams that should provide the most excitement because they are the most
unpredictable. I was talking about the Police.
The Police, like, take them or leave them.
Well, do you when someone says that song, do you think call them the Police or Sting and the Police?
Well, that was the Police. Sting, yeah. I think, of Fields of Gold.
Yeah, but was there a distinctive sound between Sting and the Police?
No, it's like saying, is there a really distinctive sound between Phil Collins and Genesis, you know?
Well, Peter Gabriel was so crazy. You know, he was part of that Genesis crew, too, so...
Yeah, but there was, you know, there's more, but it's just always a difference between, like, really Soundgarden and Audioslave and Chris Cornell's solo stuff. Now, there's...
Yeah, a lot of these teams are different in styles, as we'll get to them, but why, like you were about to say, why are they kind of in the same grouping here?
Because they're going to provide the most excitement, because they are the most unpredictable. They have a mix of young talent, and really just they could trade up, they could trade down. You wouldn't be surprised if they missed the playoffs altogether. You wouldn't be surprised if they got home court advantage.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me especially in the East, if they were like a 4 seed and, you know, they were kind of like the surprise team. Hey, look out for these guys, you know. So it wouldn't be a total shock. But then here's the thing. This is the area where the percentage is fairly high to make the playoffs. They have the pieces in place to make the playoffs and things go well. But the chances are either 50-50 or 60-40. Would that be kind of your area there?
Well, these are the ones that, you know, that we've mentioned all the bad teams and the teams that are declining, the bad teams that are slowly rising. These are the ones who are over the hump. They seem to be in. They seem to be doing well. But, you know, it just takes one trade, one injury for all that to go away. That's why,
yeah.
That's why we're watching them.
I think the difference is that when we talked about the long shots, we talked – continuously about one move, what if they make one move. Those are the kind of teams where they're one move from shooting up or they're one move away from being a horrible team. Whereas these teams, if they make one bad move, they could possibly recover from it. But it's something where it's very, when it comes to playoff contention, it's very, very sensitive. Like if you do something wrong, or if you don't trade a guy, or if somebody just doesn't work out in their position, then it could just ruin your hopes in the play. Like you could go to the playoffs, but you might be gone by round one versus, you know, continuing on and making a run for it. Let's go ahead and start talking about we're actually going to bookend this with our local yokels, and I'll start with yours here since we're going to go from east to west. Interestingly, we have four eastern teams and only one western team. The first one we're going to be talking about is the Boston Celtics. Just give me a Cliff Notes version of what you thought of Boston last year. 40-42, got the last playoff seed in the East and lost in four games to the Cavaliers.
The luck of the Irish. This team really sort of came out of nowhere with just all their myriad of trades, just picking up Isaiah Thomas at the end, and then nobody expected him to do that good. Even Danny Ainge was sort of annoyed that they did make the playoffs because they obviously lost out on Justice Winslow because of it, but this team was just the definition of overachieving. There's nobody on that team who's better than like a seventh man on any other team, but yet somehow they pulled off like a crazy run at the end.
It comes to style of play, now that you've seen two seasons under his belt, what do you call Brad Stevens' style of play?
I still don't really know it. He still doesn't, because over the past 2 years, he's had I don't know how many different starting lineups and rotations in there. Seems like every few weeks there's a new trade, and then there's a new counterpart, and okay, we need to change the style up. I'd like to say it's fast-paced, but there's really no definition or organization to it. It's just sort of everybody run up and then probably Isaiah will shoot it, or hope, you know, somebody just has a quick layup.
You got a point there about the pace. They were fifth in overall pace, which for a Brad Stevens team, if you watch his teams at Butler, he had the slowest teams in college basketball, and that's college basketball where everybody plays slow. But the pace for the Boston Celtics in the NBA was fifth. I think that may have been heavily influenced by the fact that they got a lot of really good guard play at the beginning of the season out of originally Rajon Rondo, Avery Bradley, and a couple of the other Marcus Smart, I think, jumped in there pretty quickly as a rookie and started to play. When Rondo got traded and they got a couple of parts to help them out there, then the Isaiah Thomas deal, and they kind of morphed the team around what Isaiah could do for them, because he basically became their best player overnight. And So they played quickly. They were 13th in points per game. Their field goal percentage was incredibly high. They were 5th, which means when they took a shot, they valued it. They did not take bad shots. They were 13th in three-pointers made. The one problem, though, is that their three-point percentage was at the near the bottom. They were 27th. They also didn't get to the free-throw line a lot, and their inside presence was very, very bad. They were 30th in blocks. Their rebounding was middle of the pack. What did you think was the one portion of that game, of their game plan, that they had to improve in order to make that way up? Because they did have a couple of holes that they had to fill, and you can't necessarily get one guy to fit all those holes.
Well, they had to become a defensive team because they were just allergic to rebounds. There was nobody, you know, when you have times where Jared Sellinger is the you know, playing center out there, it's just like, well, he's the only one who doesn't want to shoot threes. No, wait, he does want to shoot threes. Okay, so, you know, you have Kelly Olynyk stretch 5, Jared Sellinger stretch 4.
It got to a point where they needed Jay Crowder to be, like, the bully on the block.
He basically was playing just, he was the only guy down on the block half the time.
Yes.
And that was just, you couldn't really do that. Like I said, and like you said, they weren't a three-point shooting team. There was nobody on that team to shoot three-pointers. The only one who was really, you know, considered somewhat of a threat was Avery Bradley. He was just beyond it.
Well, that's the funny part. They took a lot of them, but they couldn't make them. Because they don't have any good three-point shooters.
Yeah, that didn't stop Kelly Olynyk from shooting 5, mm-hmm. Sellinger from shooting 4, Crowder was shooting a couple. It just, everyone just be like, oh, let's just, you know, Rebko was shooting, you know, 3 or 2. It's just like, oh, why not?
Who was your biggest surprise of the season?
The biggest surprise had to be Jay Crowder.
Jay Crowder? He was not just Tyler Zeller or the resurrection of Evan Turner?
Evan Turner, which we'll get to later, he's the odd man out right now, but Jay Crowder was just essentially a throw-in of the Rondo trade. It was really Brandon Wright, and then Crowder to get a salary cap, and all of a sudden he became this three, and, you know, not became shoot threes, but he became this big defensive guy, and he turned that into a big payday. Nobody thought he was just a throw-in. He was like, oh, well, he's just a salary cap guy. Nobody knows who he is. Mm-hmm. And he turned to a starter.
So you talk about trying to get presence inside on the defensive end, which I agree with. And the biggest move that they had made to help themselves out there was Amir Johnson, who they signed to a 2-year deal, non-guaranteed though in the following season. So if it doesn't work out for them, then they can cut him loose. They also picked up David Lee for basically nothing. Am I right? I can't remember the details.
They traded Jared Wallace.
Yeah, and then Wallace got moved from Golden State to Philadelphia, and then Philadelphia cut him.
Well, that's just basically – it just basically proves the worst contract in the league to be traded twice, mm-hmm. in like the span of a month or so. So
now, David Lee's weird because, you know, he had all-star numbers in New York and then briefly in Golden State. And then he kind of wound up being the odd man out in Golden State when they hit their stride under Steve Kerr. And then in the finals, they threw David Lee in because they had they wanted to play a little bit, you know, a little bit of small ball. And it really worked out for him really well. And David Lee, I don't want to say David Lee was like the mitigating factor behind the Warriors' turnaround in the finals. A lot of it had to do with Andre Iguodala starting minutes. But Lee helped them out a little bit, which showed, like, you know, that was David Lee's way of saying, I think I'm not dead yet. So what do you think he can do here, you know, with one more year to go?
Well, he provides that veteran leadership. I think he's twice as old as the rest of the team. Mm-hmm. By far, he is the oldest guy on the team. He's, you know, he has championship experience, and he will provide that locker room leadership. Because at one point, I don't think you've ever heard David Lee complain ever about anything. Or even realize, you know, he was always one of the underrated players because, oh, he's putting up all-star numbers. Well, what is he, you know, what's going on here? Oh, he's in Golden State. You know,
he
who cares?
He seems like a team guy, yeah.
Yeah, complete team guy. Amir Johnson's the same way because, you know, he worked his way up from a second-round pick who didn't get any playing time in Detroit to becoming that.
Yeah, Amir is a career grunt. He's one of those guys that he knew from the beginning as a second-rounder out of high school he had to work his way into his role, and he's done that pretty much since even when he got good money in Toronto, he still has worked his way into the role that he's in. I'm just not sure what he can provide. You know, I worry about his weight sometimes.
Well, he has a lot of mileage on him, as do all the high school players. Mm-hmm. So he's sort of slowly falling apart, but the way this team is built, they have so many players. There's no reason for any of them to get over 30 minutes a game.
Now they have a little bit of a logjam in a lot of the positions. You know, you have Isaiah Thomas there, but you drafted Marcus Smart, who played almost well enough that you could have made a case that he could have been a starting point guard either in year 2 or maybe near the end of year one. Avery Bradley is sort of a tweener from one to two, even though he's preferably a shooting guard on the defensive side of the ball. Evan Turner was a ball handler, even though he's naturally a small forward. You got Kelly Olynyk and Tyler Zeller. Jonas Jerebko is sort of a big body, but he's a shooter too. And then you drafted a lot of shooters in Terry Rozier and R.J. Hunter. And then you got James Young, who's coming off of developmental. They also picked up Perry Jones. Out of the mix, Brandon Bass. We already talked about Gerald Wallace. And then a couple of smaller players like Chris Babb, Gigi Dantome, and Phil Pressey. So they have a lot of pieces in place, like we were talking about, in the different positions from small forward to power forward. But it's a matter of Brad Stevens trying to find the right combination. Do you think he'll be able to do that this year?
Probably not, because there's probably going to be seven trades between now and the end of the season, because all these guys are really either A, on rookie deals or have very good contracts. So there is a logjam, and like I said, if you remove Evan Turner from that group, everyone sort of finds minutes.
Yeah, because Turner being a tweener kind of hurts them, even though his numbers were very good. He had a couple of triple-doubles. But it's one of those situations when you have a guy who's playing out of position and you have so many players that are true to their position that it kind of hurts the flow of the game, because you have this one guy trying to take turn from another guy who's supposed to be playing that role. Like, you know, when you have a small forward who plays point guard, if it's Cleveland and that's your best player, that's cool. But Evan Turner's not your best player.
No, that's the problem, is Jay Crowder sort of squeezed him out of the three, and then, you know, you're fighting Avery Bradley for the 2 minutes, and, well, you can't shoot the threes, so Avery Bradley sort of can. So what, you know, and like I said, like you said, he was one playing point guard half the time, and, well, they have like 10 point guards now, so that's why this team, you know, I ranked them higher than you did. You thought they should be in a group below this, but they overachieved so much last year. I don't think you can't put them high again.
Well, that's an intangible. Like, overachieving, is that something that you can just guarantee yourself with certain teams? You know, specifically, you know, in the case of Boston, a team coached by Brad Stevens, who, you know, the players like and the players play hard for. Can you just automatically throw that intangible into the win total of saying, well, they're really a 37-win team, but because of Stevens' ability to push them, they might get 8 more wins than they're supposed to, and they'll be able to get to 45 wins, which would get them in the playoffs.
Well, that's this thing, you know, we mentioned with Van Gundy and George Karl. They've had winning careers. It's like, well, you don't bet against them because somehow they always pull it off, and you have, like, you know, sad sack coaches who don't really do anything.
Byron Scott.
And it's just like, well, who would you bet on? Would you bet on Byron Scott, or would you bet on a George Karl? It's like, well, Karl somehow always has pulled it off year to year. Last year's team had zero talent and then somehow squeezed into the 8th spot. There's no reason they shouldn't be somewhere around the 8th spot again.
As a restricted free agent coming up, what value do you see with Jared Sullinger? Like, at his peak, what do you think can he be?
At his peak, he was the top scoring everything for the Celtics last year before his injury. Mm-hmm. And you've seen him put 20 points up in a game easily and be a 20-10 guy. It's just he doesn't seem to want to be that guy, and just, you know, battling weight problems, and which caused
him. He had that problem at Ohio State big time, you know, because he was playing center. Because that's what happens when you're in college. If you're a big man, you're the man. You're the guy on the post. Because post play is still a big part of what they play there. And so there would be moments where it's like, man, he's so good when he wants to be good, but I don't know if he really wants it, like you're saying.
Yeah, there's just doesn't seem to be the hunger, and you know he's like, well, I like to shoot threes. It's like, well, but you can't. Mm-hmm. So maybe you shouldn't.
But Amir Johnson can kind of relieve him a little bit to do that, though, right?
Well, that, yeah, but the thing is, I don't think they can play together. If you're playing Amir and Sullinger, and then having probably your Rebko as three, you have a very big, big second unit there.
Okay, and now we're going to be moving on, but we're going to be staying in the Atlantic Division. But this one is a little interesting, and that's the Toronto Raptors. Now, the Toronto Raptors would be considered kind of low for where Adam and I sort of put them in the consensus here for I'll Be Watching You. But the problem here with Toronto is that no, as good as they are, there's so many things when you really look at them in the playoffs and you say, man, there's just there's a lot missing there.
Well, they just completely redeveloped their team. They just basically stripped it down and tried to build up as fast as they can by, you know, okay, we're a shooting team who couldn't do anything else, and then, okay, let's just get rid of every shooting. You know, they got rid of Lou Williams, who pretty much got them, I think, as high as they did. I was really, A, high on him, and B, surprised they let him go. And signing Damari Carroll to that huge contract, and it's just like, well, he doesn't fit that team at all. And then they just, okay, out goes Amir, in comes Bismack, and Louis Scola, Corey Joseph, they gave a big deal, who you sort of like him.
Joseph, I think he'll be at home, obviously, in Canada. And I thought he was decent at times as a fill-in in San Antonio, so he might be able to be a surprise a little bit. For Toronto, we'll just kind of rewind for just a sec. They were the champions of the Atlantic Division for the second year in a row, but a lot of people felt like it was by default because Celtics were rebuilding, the Nets were blah, and the Sixers and the Knicks were just garbage. So a lot of people felt like, oh yeah, you won the Atlantic Division, but you didn't really play elite competition. They were 49-33, and if you watched them at the start of the season, you would have thought, man, that's really low for them. They probably should have won about 50 to 55 games, especially in the East where you can gobble up some easy wins. But this is my problem with Toronto. Regardless of the talent that they have with DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry, you know, a budding big man out of Lithuania, Jonas Valanciunas, and then a lot of depth in their bench, the problem for them is that nothing ever came easy for them. Do you think that can come down to just the coaching under Dwayne Casey, which has often been criticized, or do you think there's something else?
Well, after they won, they went something like 10-0 or 13-1 or something. After that, they sort of just played 500 ball. And if you looked at that team, it was just the only one providing really oomph was Tyler Hansborough, and we know he's not good at all. Mm-hmm. And you could say it as a point on Casey, but it was just the team was built as it was built. And you have, like, you know, like we mentioned with the Lou Williams thing, okay, we're just going to try to shoot our way in and shoot our way out. And you have DeRozan and Terrence Ross. It's like, well, you're not going to be getting to the hole. Valanciunas is still learning how to play. Maybe some people said he took a step back last year, but
he looked good in Eurobasket, though.
Big men develop slower. They take a good 4 to 5 years to sort of figure it out. So, you know, the only good thing is, I guess they gave Kyle Lowry that money, and he didn't completely tank. He sort of stayed on
pace. No, but he tanked in the playoffs. John Wall outplayed him so badly that you were thinking to yourself, oh, man, maybe Kyle Lowry wasn't worth that money.
Well, that whole team got outplayed in the playoffs.
That's true. That's true.
You can't blame it on Lowry if nobody showed up.
When it comes to Toronto, this is pretty clear cut between, you know, the schism between what makes them good and what makes them bad. What makes them good is their offense. You know, they were 4th in points per game, 12th in field goal percentage, 8th in threes made. They got to the free throw line a ton. They were 4th and made 3 free throws. They don't turn the ball over a lot. They were 3rd in turnovers, which is great. The only problem that they had on their offense was distribution of the ball. They were 22nd in assists. Defensively, ugh. 23rd in blocks, 26th in rebounding, 15th in offensive rebounding, 19th in points allowed. And their pace was not very high, so it means that if they get down big in a game, it was hard for them to come back. So, obviously, the clear motive here was to improve their defense. What did they do to improve their defense?
They spent a lot of money bringing in Damari Carroll, which a lot of people question. You know, he had his one good season. You know, he sort of bounced around for, you know, his 5 years. He was on like 4 teams, I think. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden he got a big payday. You bring in Louis Scola, who destroyed in the America's tournament.
Mm-hmm. He's still got a little bit of scoring punch left in him.
He has a little bit. Bismack, who is just negative on offense, but he'll be that defensive stopper you could put next to Valanciunas. They swapped Grievous Vasquez for DeLon Wright.
DeLon Wright is a defensive-minded point guard. He's one of those point guards who's got a taller body, so he might be able to guard the best point guard and just give him problems, even though offensively he's not well-developed.
Yeah, but Grievous, you know, he's that safe backup guy where he's not going to give you turnovers. He'll give you, you know, he's a good floor court manager, whereas
My problem with Graves, and we'll get to him soon, because actually the team that he's with is not too far from here. the problem, my problem with Gravis is that he would go into hero ball a lot. You know, he would want to, he would try to take over a game sometimes, and I didn't like that, like down the stretch of games. Sometimes you need guys that know their role, and sometimes with Gravis, I don't think he really knew his role.
Okay. And the problem with this team is you have two roster spots are going towards pure developmental players in the Brazilians, Nogueira and Caboclo.
Mm-hmm.
And those are two spots that you think you should get, okay, they're 14th and 15th, but you're holding out two roster spots for guys who can't play for you.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a smart move in case you have an injury or two?
It's tough.
You can't trade them away because they have no value, and B, you're the one who's developing, so you're going to have really irrational high value for them. So you create a thin team with this.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about Terrence Ross? Is this sink or swim for Terrence Ross? He's a restricted free agent next year.
It's sort of sink further for him because he's going to have to be happy with the six-man role now. There's a difference between accepting it and then, all right, this is what I need to survive, because you're not supplanting Carol DeRozan. Mm-hmm. Those are your two now cornerstone guys.
I think another problem they had is that as much as people like them, as energy guys, I think the backups for Valanciunas being James Johnson, and Patrick Patterson hurt them, because I don't really think much of them as two-way players. Johnson's okay at times on the defensive end, but he does sputter. And Patrick Patterson is a little bit more of a shooter. And I don't know if that was a really good replacement for Valanciunas, who's trying to be more of like an inside presence. So when you put in two guys that really don't like to play inside, that sort of hurts you.
Well, Patterson is really an undersized. He's a three in a four's body.
Exactly.
And you don't really have a pure center on this team.
Yeah, Amir Johnson's gone.
Yeah, with Johnson gone and, Steemsma and Hansborough going, your team becomes a lot smaller now, which I guess, okay, that's the way the NBA is going, blah, 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 but it's cyclical. It'll change. There's going to be a drove of seven-footers who are going to come in one day. There'll be like five of them and be like, oh, well, now the league's big again.
You mentioned Bebe Nogueira, one of the Brazilians. You think we'll see a lot more of him?
No, because we haven't seen anything in 2 years, and there's no reason to believe, the Brazilian in the America's Cup, I was surprised, who they didn't play, and he was nowhere to be found, and there's no reason to think he's all of a sudden going to get starters minutes. I mean, there's a need for it, but
I'm torn on DeMar DeRozan, because you like him a little more than I do. At his best, he is really good. And he's been good pretty much the moment he got into the league. He was a one-and-done guy out of USC. And even as raw as he was as a rookie, you could definitely see the talent there. But I just don't know if he's got the mentality to be a star. I feel like he's a guy who, if he was like your third best player, you've got yourself a really good team. But I don't feel like him as the top guy, I don't know if you're going to peak as, a really good playoff performing type of team.
Well, he's good, but not great. And you sort of pinned the nail on the head. Was there is no leader on this team. There is no Kyle Lowry's not a leader. DeMar's not a leader. Carol is the definition of not a leader.
Mm-hmm.
Who is the face of this team? There really isn't one. And that sort of worked them to get to this point as that blue collar team. But now, you sort of need somebody, a go-to guy on offense now.
Well, the face of the team is Masai Ujiri, because of all the credit that he's been given for turning the team around when he got there.
Has he really? What has he sort of turned into? They sort of look.
He did the Rudy Gay trade, which a lot of people felt like, because they kind of took off after that trade, they felt like, well, they kind of correlate them and say, well, Masai Ujiri helped the Raptors go into a winning position.
Yeah, but at the same point, the Kings also got better because of that trade, so mm-hmm. it was just a change of scenery. But, the Caboclo and Nogueira, and really, last year shown his flawed plan. You could see what he was going for, and we saw how it failed miserably. And
I think another inherent problem for them is that this is how I've always felt about the NBA. If you have players that on the whole are pretty good but not great, like we were saying, focusing on the offensive end, even in an offensively driven league like this, is not a good idea. If you have one of these lesser talented teams overall, you really need to focus on the defensive end. Because if you're a good – I think the Indiana Pacers hit it right on the head a few years ago when they focused on defense. And I mean, they had better players than what Toronto has. I'll give them credit there at that time. But I feel like defensively is where you need to go if you have a team like – where your best players are Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, Jonas Valanciunas. If you build from the defensive end and then you work on the offense later – then you got something. They went the opposite way. They decided to focus on the offensive end, and I think it hurt them.
Yeah, it did hurt them, but at the same time, DeMar DeRozan's not an elite defender.
Try to force it. You can try to force it and play team defense.
Yeah, they're a team to watch.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're a team to watch, but the reason why we put them in this, and it was a little bit more debatable why we put them in this one, is that we feel like this team has a chance to just tumble. Would you agree?
They have a chance to tumble with every team who's above them. It's like, well, can they realistically beat them? And it was the same, you know, the Wizards came in and destroyed them. It's like, well, that's the same thing. If you put them in the next level up, they wouldn't belong there because they would just get beaten out of it.
Yeah, that's the other thing. When we get to the next grouping, we're not going to mention those teams. We'll mention them next week. But, you know, those teams, like, if you put Toronto against any one of those teams, I would not give a very good chance to Toronto at all.
That's the same, you know, put Toronto against a Detroit or put Toronto against, you know,
Indiana. Yeah.
Indiana, it's like, well, Toronto should easily win that. But you put Toronto against a better team, well, no. And that's sort of how you fall in this little middle ground, this purgatory of areas.
Okay, we're going to be staying in the Eastern Conference because, like we were saying, we have four East and one West. So this is the third of the four Eastern Conference teams that we're discussing. It's the only one in the Southeast Division in this one, and we're talking about the Miami Heat. Now, me and Adam had a backstage war, trying to figure out where the Heat go here. What was your criteria of the Heat?
I had them far higher up, and it was only because of the heart condition that they tanked.
You mean the lung problem for Chris Bosh?
Lung, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Close enough.
It's around there.
Internal organ. And, you know, you're forced to play, you know, D-League players who came, you know, turned out pretty well, considering, but there's no reason this team shouldn't be way better now that Bosh is back.
You're talking about Chris Bosh having the lung infection right after the trade deadline, in which they swung a huge deal where they got Goran Dragic away from the Phoenix Suns. I don't even remember what they gave up. If they gave up anything, it really wasn't that much. Dwayne Wade, he stuck around, you know, for 1 year after LeBron. When LeBron left, a lot of people felt like, well, Miami is still a playoff team. My problem with Miami, why I ranked them far lower than you, is that even with Bosh and Wade, they still did not look like a playoff team to me in a bad Eastern Conference. And I know Wade had his moments where he would play great, but overall, you know, especially with the wear and tear on his knees, every now and then Wade would have one of those games where he would just stink it up. The most consistent player clearly was Chris Bosh. You know, Bosh played like an all-star, if you ask me. And so when that happened, you know, with Bosh going out, that took out the heart of the team. I feel like Chris Bosh is the heart of the team, not Dwayne Wade.
Oh, agreed.
I mean, everyone says, well, you know, Dwayne Wade is Wade. This is Wade County. This is his team. But the problem is, when I watch it, it really is Chris Bosh's team. You know, they play from the inside out. That's how Pat Riley likes to do it. He likes to grind you out. Even when LeBron was there, he liked LeBron to go in the post and try to dominate from the inside out. They were a defensively minded team, and their defense was still pretty good. They were sixth in points allowed, but in terms of pace, I mean, they were one of the slowest teams in the NBA. Assists, they were dead last. Points per game, 27th. What can Goran Dragic and a couple of the other additions that we'll talk about in a second? What do you think Dragic can do to help improve on the offensive end? Because that's clearly where the improvement is needed.
I have, well, obviously, compared to Mario Chalmers and Shabazz Napier, he is, you know, light years ahead of them combined, or, you know, you could make duplicate copies of him. He's still better than all four of them.
His numbers were alarming in Phoenix at the end. He wasn't playing great.
Well, because in the end, it became really a toxic situation, and, you know, that has to be some sort of distraction where you can't just keep playing because, well, everybody knows what's going on and everybody's in your business and the team can't really be a team anymore. But I don't really know how he sort of fits because he is a run-and-gun point guard. And like you mentioned, Wade is slowing down. You have Luol Deng, who shockingly sort of slowed down. Mm-hmm. And then you just have old people like Chris Anderson, Haslam.
Chalmers is getting a little older.
Yeah, but you have people like that who, you know, Hassan Whiteside, never a speed demon. And even like Dwayne Wade, he's not as fast as he used to be. So I don't really don't. They're gonna have to sort of change their style up a bit.
Where did Hassan Whiteside come from? They're like, did you expect like a 7-footer with that kind of wingspan to really be that quick of an impact player in the in a team like Miami where they needed a post play so badly? They were still bottom of the league in rebounding. Now let me suffice by saying, if I said it right, that when they won the championship and went to the finals the year after that, they were also in the bottom of the league of rebounding all of those years as well. So Miami being dead last in rebounding is not a normal occurrence. But do you think of Whiteside being there was a real bright, like, it was a real bright and shining light for them a little bit in the post? And do you think that he will be deserving of a contract if he develops again into a double-double type of player?
Well, A, that's a lot to expect that he would sort of keep up that insane stat line he had for those couple of weeks back in the winter. Mm-hmm. He's gonna slow down. And for those who, like, you remember him playing back in Sacramento and whatnot, you can see the talent was there. He's just a head case. Mm-hmm. He was just one who's too good for everything. And then, you know, he even heard he had, you know, wasn't he suspended for one game for doing something stupid? And it's like one of those, well, is he going to get it? You know, you have the talent, but if you don't have the brain, well, you know, you'll be in China.
Now, a lot of these players that they kept over, you know, from the team that had contended, minus LeBron, you know, Udonis Haslem, Chris Anderson, Mario Chalmers, let me see here, and even Luol Deng after they brought him in, even Dwayne Wade, they're all going to be free agents after this upcoming season. Do you think this is sort of a last hurrah for that cast of characters that they had in Miami?
Well, number one, Mario Chalmers, Chris Anderson, and Udonis Haslem, nobody would take their deals. They were offering them to anybody, and nobody would even, you know, even Philly was like, nah, we're good.
I think Anderson has value. I don't think Chalmers has any value. That's why I was shocked that they traded Napier.
They have no value because, you know, Chris Anderson, okay, he might have something left in the tank, but he's also making a lot more than he should be making. You know, it's the difference between Hassan's veteran minimum and then Chris Anderson getting $3-4 million. The only reason they got rid of Napier is because their luxury tax bill is way too high, and they need to get rid of any penny they possibly could. And nobody even wanted Mario Chalmers they have literally zero value. And you know, they've added some pieces, but which you'll get to in a second. But these players, yeah, they're all free agents, but they're all the old guard. Luol Deng was supposed to be a placeholder. Okay, we lost LeBron, but we brought in Luol. Okay, yes. He's not going to get 30 points a game, but okay, he'll give us 15 and we can make it up elsewhere.
He gave him less than that.
Yeah, he sort of really slowed down.
Yeah, I think just health and, you know, health and just age just combined to just really get to Luol Deng a lot faster. I think his style of play, being a little bit more physical of a small forward, I think that hurt him a lot. Now, at small forward, like, you know, you mentioned about the additions that they made, they got one free agency and they got one in the draft that a lot of people are got some high hopes for. Gerald Green out of Phoenix, I thought that was a nice little deal. I think Gerald Green can actually be a starting small forward, depending on how small they want to play lineup-wise against certain teams. And then Justice Winslow out of Duke is a guy that he doesn't have it all together offensively, but defensively he's very good, and he's got great athleticism, and he's a guy that he's got that, like, on the court type of smarts. Like, he knows how to play a guy. He knows how to get a steal where a steal might not, usually a player can't get a steal from that position, but Winslow's just got that really nice intangible of being smart. Not like you know, in terms of like being the smartest player on the court, but kind of like a Wiley type of player, like a Wiley veteran type of mindset.
Yes, plays older than he should.
Yes, exactly.
Whereas Gerald Green, very low basketball IQ, and It was very surprising that Phoenix let him go, and nobody really seems to know why. Everyone's like, well, he seemed to be well adjusted there. He seemed to have finally got it. You know, he seems to have sort of put things together, but maybe Phoenix was so dysfunctional, it was just we need to get rid of every part.
Of what they had before, you know.
Yeah, it's just sort of everything. Out. Yeah. And then, Amari has nothing left. The only thing they're going to do is they're going to place Whiteside's locker right in between Bosch and Amari, and they're going to be like, you don't do anything.
Well, Goron loves pick and roll. He also played with Amari Stoudemire way back in the Phoenix days. Obviously it's not 2010 anymore, but do you think they can try to rekindle a little bit of that? Nash pick and roll?
You saw what he had to offer in Dallas, and if that was the one time where they're like, okay, he has something left, you'd see it, but he sort of just tanked hard down there. And it's just, like I said, it's going to be just for sort of motivation for Whiteside.
I think the offense will improve. I think their field goal percentage was really good anyway. My problem, though, is that I don't think the pace is going to pick up just because Dragic is there. I don't think all of a sudden Eric Spoelstra is going to be pushing like a really fast lineup out there with Dragic and Gerald Green and Justice Winslow and Chalmers. I still think it's going to be a little bit of a slower team. So if their field goal percentage stays high, then that means their efficiency has to come with the assists. It has to come with limiting turnovers. It has to come with, you know, getting to the free throw line. They're going to have to improve in all of those because they were either bad or middle of the pack in all of those things I just mentioned. You know, three-point shooting was one of those things where really I think it was just LeBron predicated. Because of LeBron's ability to get players open by drawing double teams, that's where the three-point efficiency came from. So for them being a bad three-point shooting team doesn't shock me because of their focus on the defensive side. But offensively, do you think there's going to be definitely be some improvement now that Dragic is there?
Well, it'll be improvement, but it'll take a while because you sort of mentioned it. Dragic is best around the second team. If you have Gerald, Justice, and Chris Anderson on the court with you, you'd be running pick and rolls all day and just running up and down, up and down, up and down.
Yeah.
With Dwayne Wade, you don't want to push a pace on with him.
No, you want to slow it down. That's the right way to go. And Chris Bosh is sort of a slower guy. He likes to pop out for those threes, but he's not one of those guys that tries to hurry up his shots. He kind of like takes his time on his shot fakes. You know, he likes to back people up into the post, and when he does it, he likes to take a couple of dribbles, and then he kind of feels it out and maybe pass it out back to Wade. They're old. I mean, let's be honest. They're a little older now. You know, you don't want to try to push them into oblivion.
He'd say, you just don't want to run the wheels off him, which they're really trying to do with Wade because... Mm-hmm. You know, every year, everyone keeps asking, is this going to be the last year for him? Because, you know, he just plays so hard. There's no, like, he's not even trying to extend his career. He's just like, I'm going to go until I'm done.
Do you think this is a surefire playoff team?
Yes.
I say no. I say that they got to earn it. They're going to have to show in the months of February and March that they really want this. That's going to be when it gets hard, when their offense ain't clicking and they get on a losing streak after the All-Star break. I hate to try to be a cheat and say, well, we're not going to really know until February, March, and April, but that's really where the money's going to be made for Miami Heat.
Nobody even starts till Christmas.
They started out okay to start the season last year. They actually did play well in the month of November. You know, Bosch wound up making the All-Star team because he was clearly the best player and he had good overall numbers. You know, this is a man who had 0 points in the NBA Finals in a Game 7. But that's the whole thing about the NBA. It depends on the chances you're given. It depends on the opportunity.
Yeah, that's the thing you seem to be forgetting is you're taking the last year's end of the Heat run where you had Beasley and Henry Walker playing 30 minutes a game.
Don't forget Tyler Johnson.
And your boy Tyler Johnson, who came out of nowhere and decided to hit every three-pointer. He was the only three-point shooter on that team. And those are three guys who came straight from the D-League, and who knows where Beasley came from. But, you know, you're replacing that with much better players, and there's no reason I think they shouldn't be easily in the playoffs.
Okay, and we're going to be getting away from Miami now, and we're going to go to our last Eastern Conference team, and this one's in the Central Division, which is where LeBron lives now, and that is going to be the Milwaukee Bucks. The Bucks were a total shock. I thought they were going to be awful, even though Jabari Parker was coming in. I didn't expect Jason Kidd to really turn it around as quickly as he did, but somehow he pulled it off.
Yeah, I called it.
Okay, mic drop. Well, what did you call? Like, what? Just to kind of clarify,
you said they weren't
going to
win 15 games last year, and I'm like, they're going to easily win 35 or 30, maybe. It would be a good season for them, and then they just surprised everybody.
If you look at the stats, they were a little sputterific, okay? They were 41-41. They started out really well, and then with Parker's injury, they had to change things. But if you look at the stats, it's almost like bipolar. You know, they were 22nd in points per game, but they were 7th in field goal percentage. They were 23rd in three-pointers made, but they were 7th in three-pointer percentage. They were 8th in points allowed, but they turned the ball over constantly. You know, they were first in steals, they were 11th in blocks, but their rebounding was awful. So what is this team, and why does it work? Is it because, I think it may be because of some of the disposition that they have in some of the the spots that they have from 1 through 5, where they have a lot of guys that if you look at them on a photo, you would say, that guy's not a point guard. That guy's not a small forward. That guy's not a power forward. But somehow they put him in there, and in some weird fucked up way, it works.
This team, basically, everything you said begins and ends with the Greek Freak. Like, if you just watch them play, you can understand everything.
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yes, you can see why they were first in steals, but, yeah, like, first in turnovers. You can see, like, okay, you see, up first in traveling, but then all of a sudden you're high in this other stat. It's just the team is, with the exception of him, it was just literally a bunch of no-name players. Like Chris Middleton, John Henson.
Now, Chris Middleton got paid, and John Henson just got a decent extension himself.
And these players aren't exciting players, but they're all under the radar. Like, they're efficient. Mm-hmm. And that seemed to be, like, they didn't have... They just sort of, okay, you have this one player, we don't know what he is, he doesn't know what he is, but we know he's special, and let's just try to fit around him however we can with our mismatched parts.
Everybody likes Parker, but it's just too early to tell. I mean, from what I saw out of him, you know, before the knee injury, he looked pretty good. He looked like an NBA player. But
he looked good, but then when he was gone, the team went totally a different style.
Yeah, it did. Now, did you like the Brandon Knight-Michael Carter-Williams trade? And going forward, do you think Carter-Williams' advantages in terms of his length, because he's a 6'6" point guard, do you think that can work to their advantage?
Oh, no, I thought it was a terrible trade. And I believe I told you, like, immediately, like, they're going to miss the playoffs because of this. And they slid down. They went 0-4. They lost 10 in a row, I believe.
Yeah, the only reason they made the playoffs was because the teams that were behind them were so bad. They were all losing teams.
Yeah, but then I don't think he's any good because, well, Philly sort of ruined him. They Antoine Walker him. They just said, go do what you want. Well, I want to shoot threes all day. You know, go and have fun. You don't need to learn how to play. Don't run any plays. Just do what you want.
Their losses were, I don't want to call them minimal, but they were the kind of losses where you hear them and you go, eh. Zaza Pachulia went to the Mavericks. Jared Dudley, they traded to the Washington Wizards. Ersan Ilyasova, they traded to the Detroit Pistons. And then Kendall Marshall, they basically waived him, and now he's with Philadelphia. Their biggest addition, and they took a swing here, and it's another guy in terms of disposition, but it's in the opposite. It's a guy who kind of is smaller in size compared to his position, and that's Greg Monroe. Did you like the Monroe deal?
I didn't understand it, but I like it, which I think is just sort of the definition of Milwaukee.
Yeah.
I don't know how he fits in, but that's a great addition because he's now going to be the anchor in the center they never had. Because, you know, Zaza, he was often injured and liked to shoot the three. Ersan was a four, liked to shoot the three. This is, you know, he's just going to sit down and make, I ain't moving.
And this is Monroe's audition, really, in terms of national prominence. Because I'm not saying he's going to make the All-Star team and be the best player for the Bucks. What I mean by that is that in Detroit, let's be honest, he's had a forgettable run. And I don't mean that he's had forgettable years where he's been really bad. His numbers were quite good. Even in his last year there in Detroit, his numbers were pretty good all around. It's just that nobody watched him. You know, nobody really knew who he was. I mean, what do you think, for the casual viewer that watches a Milwaukee Bucks game, say, hey, let's watch the young Bucks. What are they going to see when they watch Greg Monroe?
Who's that tall guy?
Yeah, but who's that tall guy that looks like he's 6'8"?
Well, considering the rest of the team all looks like they're 6'5". Mm-hmm. Like, especially Giannis, Middleton doesn't look big. Parker looks very small. It's just a very just small looking team.
Yeah, but they're all big for their positions compared to the average, which I think helps them. Jabari Parker is 6'9". Middleton is...
Yeah, they don't play that way. They all play smaller.
Yeah, even Gravis Vasquez at 6'6", who they got in a draft day trade with the Toronto Raptors.
Which I think is, we just mentioned Toronto. That's a great, solid backup, as he's going to provide some sort of stability for the... I don't know. We'll have to see how Carter Williams goes. If Kidd can turn him around.
I struggle with this one. What is John Henson? What is he?
Is he the guy that created the Muppets? Oh, that's Jim Henson.
He looks like a Muppet. I said this before. He's got like the small ears, and he's got the big jawline, and he's got the crazy, crazy arms where it looks like somebody's hanging it off of a string. You watch him. Oh, by the way, have you watched the Muppet Show on ABC? The new one, the kind
yeah,
of like the
it is
office-ish one.
It's I don't understand that either.
But I like it.
I like it, but there's no like.
Like, people are like, well, the Muppet shouldn't be making sex jokes. I'm like, yeah, they do. Did you watch them in the 70s? They were as taboo.
Oh, yeah, there's tons of innuendo, but it seems, like I said, it's a lot of forced innuendos. And just, maybe it's just because I'm used to all they do is movies now. I'm like, 22 minutes is just, like, way too short.
Yeah.
I'm like.
And to try to transition that in the worst way possible, that's kind of what makes the Bucks work. They don't try to fit people into roles. They don't tell Giannis, okay, Giannis, you're going to defend and you're going to rebound. No, they let Giannis do whatever he wants, okay? Jabari Parker, if you want to freelance and you want to go attack the basket, even though you're more of a shooter off the ball, you can do that. That's fine. Do you think that that's laziness on the part of Jason Kidd and it just kind of worked for him by happenstance, or do you think there's a method to that madness?
I don't know. Because he resurrected O.J. Mayo from completely useless to being very productive there. Mm-hmm. His numbers returned to form. But yet, like I said, you said, nobody has a real defined spot. There's no real... you have your starting five, but it's just like, go out there and do your thing. And, which is, I guess you could say, is growing pains of a coach trying to figure everything out, but...
But we'll say this, they're in a much better position going into this season than they were last season, where everyone's saying, okay, let's see how many people they can get in this arena that they're about to tear down for a new one anyway.
Yeah, or they're going to go move because they're god-awful.
Exactly, yes.
But yeah, Greg Monroe is a huge signing, and I don't know how these players, these kids are going to go up to higher expectations, because as you know, Jared Dudley didn't provide anything, but he was the sort of veteran leadership that this team doesn't even have now.
We talked about peak with Jared Sullinger. At his peak, what can Giannis Antetokounmpo be?
He can be literally whatever he wants. In his peak, he could become the next Tracy McGrady. He can become the next Magic. He could become the next sort of KG.
I think he's kind of like Ron Artest, but without the mental baggage.
But that's the thing is, you just watch him play, and you see him, like, he knows that he doesn't know anything yet. He knows he's learning, and he wants to learn, and it's just, well, what player do you, what all-star do you want to be?
The athleticism is ungodly. I was watching preseason. He did a dunk where his head was behind the rim, where I usually you could maybe like squeeze that in for like a layup that kind of rolls off. He dunked the thing.
Even Eurobasket, he was like the only one who was like, everyone was just sort of playing. He's like, no easy baskets. And,
but
the only thing I worry about him is if he just gets a knee injury, that just might be it.
Oh yeah, because he's so it's so single minded with the athleticism. That's what makes him. So yeah, I mean. Knock on wood here. I hope to God that doesn't happen.
Because, he's 2 years away from picking that path and becoming that player. So he's still, a junior, essentially.
Last year when we previewed Milwaukee, we said, well, Jabari Parker is one of those guys where you could put his picture on an arena and people will come. Do you think Giannis is that kind of guy now?
Oh, yeah.
Right now?
Yeah. Right now, everybody is impressed by him. There's nobody who doesn't know who he is. Nobody pronounces his name, but everybody knows who he is, and everybody's seen what he can do. And everyone's just like, this kid's only 21. Mm-hmm. Like, that him right there. And people know.
I like Michael Carvalho's a little more than you. So I do think that Milwaukee's got a little bit of a better chance than, you know, than the chance that things could just totally fall apart. But I really don't think that's going to happen. I think Kidd's got a good head on his shoulders as a coach. I think he knows what his players want because he himself was a player and he himself was a floor leader. So I think he'll be – he's like a point guard whisper. I mean, for Christ's sakes, he turned Brandon Knight into a decent point guard. That's impossible.
And you were so awful. You were off on him so hard. And
who, Brandon Knight?
Yeah, you're like, oh, he's terrible. And then,
he was the Shaq and a full MVP, am I right? Or was that Otto Porter because of
Otto Porter.
You do not know what Shaq and a full is?
No, I do. I just said Otto Porter.
Oh, it was Otto Porter. Okay. I thought you said, I don't know. But no, I still don't like Brandon Knight. Phoenix Suns, good luck with that. Now we're going to be going to the Western Conference, and we're going to be talking about the only team in the Western Conference. And like we were saying, we were bookending it with our local teams. We talked about Adam Celtics at the top, and now at the bottom we're going to go to mine, and that's the New Orleans Pelicans. I'm going to kind of keep mine saved up, so you go ahead and just go off.
They are already in midseason form. Half the team is on injured reserve. They've already started scouring D-League draft rosters for the next players for the next few weeks. Yeah, this team, you know, they've been hit by the injury bug many times before. They really didn't have money to do anything other than do the solid thing of give your boy Anthony Davis every penny they possibly could.
Rightfully deserved.
Because, you know, everybody, this year, everybody's expecting him to become a top five player, like, period, in the NBA.
Well, do you have doubts?
No, well, a little bit of doubts, because if everyone around you keeps going away, you can only muscle so much out of it. And, you know, let's think back to, like, when LeBron was, like, a rookie and they still weren't making the playoffs. It's like, well, you can will him so hard, but you can't get every point. You can't get every rebound. You know, there's five other people on the team, and, you know, he's been known for being a great teammate. And the last thing I think you want him to be is sort of that me guy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Replaced with Alvin Gentry, who you are very, very pleased with.
Well, Alvin Gentry was an assistant coach under Steve Kerr with the Golden State Warriors when they won the NBA championship. He was sort of their offensive coordinator while Ron Adams was the defensive coordinator. He brought in a couple of other assistants, like Darren Erman, who he had been familiar with in the past. He had also coached at Golden State under Mark Jackson. And a lot of people really like that hire of Erman. They think that he's sort of a head coach in the mix too, like down the road. Monty Williams was a guy that, you know, his first year there with Chris Paul, it was the last year where they had Chris Paul. They made the playoffs. They were sort of defensively minded. But after that, a lot of people felt bad for Monty because of the whole Chris Paul trade, where they sort of got the raw end, and then they drafted Anthony Davis right after that season in 2012, and it just never came together. And a lot of people kept saying, "Well, you got to wait and see. You got to wait and see." And the Benson family, who owns the team now, they are renowned for being very patient with their coaches, of saying, "Well, let's see where it goes." And they finally made a big, significant move in the front office where they took Monty Williams after making the playoffs. So, you know, credit to Monty there, getting him to the playoffs. They lost in four games to that great Warriors team, and then Monty got axed. And I did not shed a tear for Monty getting fired. Did you?
No, because you were just too busy going, finally, this is. How many years past it should be?
It should have happened at the end of 2014 is what I said. I really think he had his chance with Drew Holiday and Tyreek Evans just to see 1 year of what he could do, and I just wasn't impressed. And I knew after that, I said, I don't care what they knew next year, Monty's not the guy. And finally somebody in the front office saw what most of the fans have been saying for a long time, that Monty had to go. Their numbers last year are not going to be very indicative of what they do this year, because Gentry is so different from what Monty liked to do. But let's look at them anyway. They were middle of the pack in points per game, but they were 10th in field goal percentage. They were 19th in three-pointers made, but they were 4th in three-point field goal percentage. Do you know how valuable three-point field goal percentage is in the NBA today, Adam? That is fucking gold. It's gold, Jerry. So when you can take a lot of threes and make most of them, you need to value that. You think Alvin Gentry is going to go bombs away?
No.
I think they're going to go bombs away.
I this is where I'm going to disagree. I think Gentry's is going to go, I'm going to ride my all-star. You know, he did the bombs away thing, but, you know, he hasn't had a player like this. And
yeah, but he can take threes, too.
He's starting to take threes, which is not a good sign in my book.
You still got Evans. You still got Jrue Holiday. Holiday's had so many injuries since he got in New Orleans. Tyreek Evans is a decent under-the-rim type of point guard. Not the greatest facilitator, but, you know, a little bit of a me-first guy. But do you think that Evans still has value?
Tyreek Evans peaked after his first year and then just really leveled off. And the fact he's a point guard now, it's... The thing with Tyreek is he'll give you what he'll give you. He's not going to be an all-star. He's not going to be that player everybody thought he would be. But as a sixth man, he is probably one of the better six men in the league.
Yeah. Here's the one thing about the team stats that you do have to take into account. Most, even though they made the change with the coaching staff, if you really look at the roster is almost exactly the same. The only people that are gone, at least as of now, we don't know about Norris Cole. That's still... I think he's there. I don't know if they've actually made a deal, but it's one of those late deals. Jimmer Fredette is gone. He went to the Spurs. And they added Kendrick Perkins, who's sort of a locker room leader. I'm not sure what he can provide as a center unless, you know, Omer Sheik gets hurt again, which he probably will, and Perkins is going to step in. The thing is that the roster is the same. So when you look at the stats that they had last year, it sort of shows what you're good at and what you're bad at and what Alvin Gentry can use to exploit it. That's why I think the three-point shooting is going to be huge for them. And that's why I think assists aren't going to be a problem for them because they were 11th in assists. That means they shared the ball a lot. The other thing you got to remember about Golden State last year is that they were a great rebounding team. And that was helped out a lot last year by Ashik. And also, when it came to blocks, they were first in blocks. I give almost all of that credit to Anthony Davis. So do you think they'll be able to make that delicate balance where they can be a good rebounding team, an efficient defensive team, which Monty was never able to do, and also be an efficient offensive team at the same time?
I don't think so with this team in particular, because I believe you used the term delicate, which we should just say is the definition of the New Orleans Pelicans. Is just they seem to be a team made out of glass where everybody is injured and you can never have that starting lineup ever. They have them for like a week or two before somebody goes away for a month. So how much balance can you have of being just pure efficiency when you're always playing a star down?
There's always a player when they get a new coach where the new coach embraces them and they kind of find that second life. Do you see a player here that might find that, like a Ryan Anderson or an Eric Gordon or even a Dante Cunningham, a small forward?
The problem is it's just the same lineup, and there's nobody who's – you have who you have. You have a very weak bench. You have Ryan Anderson, and that's it. Ajinka found himself last year. You know, he came back from Europe and said, I'm not a total bust. And, you know, he was valuable as a backup, but maybe the return of Quincy Pondexter –
who's already hurt.
Well,
if they get anything out of Jrue Holiday, that would be huge. I'm not saying Jrue Holiday is like this, like missing treasure for them, like a missing jewel. But it's like if he can provide any kind of decent point guard play, that helps him so much because you can play Tyreek Evans off the ball, which is where he's a little bit more comfortable, so that you can try to like distribute the ball better. And then you can just put Eric Gordon on the fucking bench, man. You don't have to start the guy. You know, he's in the last year of his deal. Do you think he'll be a Pelican by March?
Probably, because what value does he have at his salary?
Expiring, though.
It's expiring, but with the cap going up, that really doesn't do anything. If you want to trade him, you have to take in some bad contracts in return. So, can they make a deal? Yeah, but who do they really have to offer?
My point with the Pelicans is that they made all these moves where they stood pat. I think they're in a position where they might be able to make that big move later, whether it's in February or it's in June of next year. I hate to say wait till next year, but I feel like they can be a team that can make it kind of like Milwaukee last year, where they can make that ascent you know, to becoming a playoff team in the Western Conference, and then they make the move in the summertime where they say, okay, let's go for it here. And I think that's where the position the Pelicans are in right now.
Well, the problem is the Pelicans, we kept having the same talk every year, is they just keep getting older and not better, and there's no young players on the bench because they trade away their first-round pick every year, it seems.
Yeah, they're one of the youngest teams in the league.
It's just you have these same guys who aren't really – they're not going to get you there. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what you could get for them. But who knows? Again, we mentioned how Jared Wallace could be traded twice, and he has by far the worst contract ever.
Is Anthony Davis – I mean, it's obvious that he'll be an MVP candidate just by the sheer numbers. Do you think if he can turn the Pelicans to like a second-round playoff team, you know, best-case scenario, are we looking at sort of like a Michael Jordan type of ascent whereby, or maybe even a Kevin Durant type of ascent, whereby year three, year four, he's the league MVP?
Oh, he could be. He's not going to be the league MVP, but I could see him getting a vote or two. Mm-hmm. At this point,
he got votes this past season.
Yeah, he did, and they were well deserved. But this year is a new year, and I shouldn't expect him to see have more votes, and the votes continuing in the upward trend is what I'm trying to say.
Is Anthony Davis like the new Kevin Garnett? Where when Kevin Garnett got the Big Max deal in 1998, it sort of popped everybody's eyeballs, and then it became the normal max. Do you think that Anthony Davis contract is that way, or do you think there's a bigger one in the workings?
No, his is the normal max right now.
5-145, I think it was.
Yeah, something like that. That was the highest they could go, and based on. Yeah, that's one of those weird things. You're 8 years, you can get more, and 10% trades, this, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, they gave him every pen. They didn't hold back on that. So no, there's no reason he can't be, but there's no way they're going to be a second-round playoff team.
No way?
No way. Mm. Bold prediction.
I'll have to fight you on that one later. Okay, so that's going to be finishing up the teams that we're discussing between for I'll Be Watching You. Just to kind of clarify before we get into our rankings, our own personal rankings, we said Celtics, Raptors, Heat, Bucks, and the Pelicans. So now we're at the point where Adam and I go through those five teams that we talked about, and we do our own rankings of where we feel they go from 15, 14, 13, 12, and 11. So I will let Adam get his first shot. We're going to go from lower to higher. Who was your number 15 team ranked?
That would be the Celtics.
I would agree. I would say Boston. So that's my 15. 14 for me, I would probably have to say the Milwaukee Bucks.
I would agree.
Oh, you okay? We're getting somewhere here. What you got for 13?
New Orleans.
You got the Pelicans. I got Miami. I'll say Miami at 13. I like the potential of Anthony Davis being the top player on the team than Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade being the top player. And let me see. My turn here is at 12. I got two left. Which ones do I have left? I got the
Raptors
Pelicans.
And Pelicans.
I got the Raptors and the Pelicans. I hate this. I'll go with the Pelicans here at 12.
You just did that because you didn't want me to make fun of you for putting the Pelicans up top.
Yeah,
because
you put the Celtics last.
Well, the Celtics deserve to be last.
Yeah, but
Celtics, they're.
But why do the Pelicans deserve to be 13th in yours?
Because I have the Heat much higher than you do.
What do you like about the Heat the most? Like, what's the one part about the Heat that you look at and you say, man, that's going to be the thing that makes them better than most of these teams that we're talking about?
They, when you ripped out Chris Bosh, you ripped out the team, and the team crumbled without him. Now that he's back, there's no reason I don't think they shouldn't be back where they were.
But you still have the Raptors at the top like I do.
I would have the Heat at the top.
So you have the Raptors at 12, and you have the Heat at 11. Wow. That's a leap of faith there.
That's a leap of faith, but then again, like I said, the fact that Toronto tore down its team sort of lends I'm dropping them down just a little bit because of that. And I don't know how well this new group is going to play together. If Damari Carroll is the answer. If he is the answer, then great. But I see the Heat in their last you know, few moments as a much better team than up-and-coming Raptors.
Okay, bold prediction time where we do rapid fire as we start to kind of round things out. You start first. Fire me one at me.
Oh, the Pelicans are not going to even make it to the second round.
Marcus Smart will be a candidate for league's most improved player.
The Heat will obviously be an easy playoff team and could easily get home court.
Giannis Antetokounmpo makes the All-Star game.
Jonas Valanciunas could also be most improved player?
Question mark?
Question mark?
The New Orleans Pelicans will be a top 5 3-point shooting team in terms of field goals made. They're going to go warrior ball.
They'll also be top 5 in most injuries.
That's not a bold prediction. That's normal. But no, I'm going to tell you with Marcus Smart, it's not like he's the best player ever. I just think he knows how to play. You know, and he knows how to make plays for his team. You know, and if he gets more minutes, you know, now that Rondo's gone, and, you know, if Isaiah Thomas, you know, goes back to being in his role as a sixth man, I think Smart's going to be the starting point guard.
The thing with Smart is, you know, he sort of is the small Tony Allen 2.0.
He looked good in Summer League. He looked like a gamer. He wanted to win those Summer League games.
He wanted to win. It's just he wants to shoot and be the hero ball, and he can't shoot the three.
Yes, that's true.
So that seems to be the problem with him. But again, this is the probably the most interesting group of five we have.
Yeah, it's fascinating because it's a team. It's teams that we know will be on the radar. We don't think they'll fall off the map. But they're teams where, when it comes to playoffs, we really are not sure. You know, when we talked about the, you know, the bottom 15, you know, the lower half of the league, most of those teams are probably not going to make the playoffs. Like, there's a few of them that probably will, but out of the 15 we talked about, I would probably estimate what about like 4 of them are going to make the playoffs that we didn't expect.
Yeah.
Whereas these teams, they're probably going to make the playoffs, you know. So, but they're not teams where, you know, when we go to the next group, we're going to be talking about them. Those are teams that really, it's not about November to March. It's about April and May and June. You know, it's really, that's when, you know, I don't want to give away the name of the episode, but that's when it's time to really step up. Whereas these teams, you don't have to step up, but it would be really fun if you did.
These are the teams that will be in the show, most likely, and we've seen 8s beat 1s before, we've seen 8s go all the way, yeah. So that all you need to do is just make the tournament.
Yeah, but that's why we say I'll be watching you, because it doesn't necessarily mean, like, hey, you're a curious little kitty cat, I'm going to keep track of what you're doing. For some of these teams, that's kind of where we're at with them, and then there are some of them, like the Raptors, where we're like, we're watching you, we don't know where you're going, but if things are going badly, we're watching you, and I'm not saying that it's always optimistic to be in this category.
Well, it's better being in this category than the ones below it.
That's true, because you actually have a good chance. So, on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. We're going to be checking back next week as we continue our 2015-16 season.